Well, the process is a very, I'm going to call it standard strategic process, right? So first you need to understand who are your core consumer segments. What does your brand stand for today? So basically, if it's an established brand, so what are the associations consumers and your desired target consumer have with your brand today? That's your starting point. And then you build into the next phase and you think about what matters to these consumer segments. What are the associations you want to build and create for the future? So what are the ones you need to dedicate your marketing efforts against?
Hello and welcome to the Brand Tune podcast, hosted by me, Shireen Smith, IP lawyer, marketer, and author of Brand Tuned. The podcast focuses on how to design brands, avoiding commoditization and intersecting them with intellectual property during the creation process. Before the episode begins, I just want to mention the Brand Tuned accreditation course, which is all about how to create new brands. The brochure outlining the curriculum is downloadable on the brandtuned.com website. My guest today is Yuli Applebaum, an experienced award-winning brand strategist who has held senior roles, including in advertising agencies like BBDO and Leo Burnett. He's the founder of First the Trousers, Then the Shoes, and the author of Brand Positioning Workbook. Hello, Yuli. Welcome to the Brand Tune podcast.
Hello, Shireen. Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really keen to discuss positioning. But first, I just wonder what the name means. And, you know, I noticed it immediately. Is
first
that
the trousers? You mean first the trousers, then the shoes?
Yes.
It's when I decided to launch my own company, I was looking for a name, and I'm focused mainly on strategy, so I don't do any form of execution. But I've always looked at strategy as a creative problem-solving exercise. So there is a strong creative problem-solving component to every strategic process. So I didn't want to simply call myself, you know, Applebaum Brand Consulting or Brand Consulting and Partners, whatever. So I decided to express in the name this notion of strategy first. That's a must. But strategy is also a creative ideation process that needs to be taken into account if you want to get to a better outcome. So that's where it came from. And frankly, it was fueled by a little bit of liquor and a brainstorming with a friend. But that's what came out of this brainstorm the following day when I woke up with a hangover. I saw the name. I said, that's the one. And it stands out. It's very distinctive. And I love it when my client introduced me. And sometimes they get it wrong. They say, you know, first the shorts, then the flip-flops, or all these kind of things. But the idea is always conveyed, whatever words are being used. So I'm good with that.
That's great. So let's start with the basics. What is positioning?
Well, positioning, the interesting thing, Shireen, is there are so many definitions of positioning, right? Literally every strategist has its own definition, and most of them are to 80% good. I define a brand positioning as really the sum of all the associations you want to associate, you want your core consumer segment to associate with your offering. And so it's really simply a bundle of association that your job as a marketer is to build, to maintain, to nurture, to evolve, et cetera, et cetera. And what I like about that definition is it's, as you can hear, I'm German, I'm very pragmatic. What I like about that definition is it's actionable because it tells me as a marketer, my job is to build associations. Everything I do as a marketing professional, whether it's a promotion, a TV campaign, a new product development, a packaging design, all these elements need to support and reinforce an association. If they don't, you're wasting money as a marketer. So that's really very simple, very basic, but what I like about it, very actionable.
And is it just another aspect of differentiation? How does it tie into differentiation?
Well, I think differentiation is something is one of the criteria when you need to take account into account when developing a brand positioning. I think what's valuable about this definition is that we as humans or individuals, we create perceptions by creating these association networks, basically, right? We take a piece of information and connect it with something we already know. So looking at brands as bundles of association also takes into account the way people absorb information, process information. And this information, of course, needs to stand out from the context in which you present it, which is often the competitive context. And that's what makes it so the differentiation is a criteria you need to respect if you want your brand to stand out. You know, relevance is another one, obviously. But by looking at it through the lens of association, you can start to say, okay, what are the core association my brand has or I want to build with my brand? Are they relevant? Are they distinctive? You know, do they stand out in the category? So what I like, it's like basically going to a doctor and the doctor telling you, I have no idea how the body works, but listen to nice music that's going to take care of your problem. You know what I mean? So understanding how consumers process this information and create a judgment based on these networks of association makes it, I think, more pragmatic, more efficient. But that's just my humble opinion.
Right. So when you first create a brand and you think through what your vision is, what your mission is, and you know what change you want to bring about in the world, and you know what do you then and what your purpose is effectively for setting up that business, how do you then move on to creating your positioning?
Well, the process is a very, I'm going to call it standard strategic process, right? So first you need to understand who are your core consumer segments. What does your brand stand for today? So basically, if it's an established brand, so what are the associations consumers and your desired target consumer have with your brand today? That's your starting point. And then you build into the next phase and you think about what matters to these consumer segments. What are the associations you want to build and create for the future? So what are the ones you need to dedicate your marketing efforts against? And to get there, I use this methodology. I did this analysis of over 1,200 case studies of effective marketing that basically allowed me to identify, I call them like 26 sources of brand association. So once you determine what your brand stands for, what consumers associate with your brand, you can use this methodology to generate hypotheses, let's put it this way, of what the brand should stand for in the future. But the process itself from analysis, strategy development, validation, and implementation is fairly standardized. The tools I use within the process is what stands out and what makes this methodology different, which is also what is explained in the brand positioning workbook.
So, is positioning something that you set and you never change? Like, sort of the purpose you're in business, the change you want to make, or is it something that you might change from time to time?
I think it's something you would want to change maybe every 3 to 5 years or something like that, because the market conditions change, a new competitor comes into play, and it really depends also on the category you're in. So, you know, I worked with a premium liquor brand that had launched a completely unique, crafted sort of like offering, and 3 to 4, I think it was like 4 or 5 years within the launch, a lot of competitors had flooded the market. So what they wanted to do is they wanted to reassess their positioning, understand whether it was still relevant and distinctive in this new market environment. So every 3 to 4, 5 years, I say I would reevaluate this and think whether, you know, has the market changed? Has the consumer changed? Have there been new trends that we might be missing? Are new competitors in the category that I really need to pay attention to? But positioning is not something that you change every 6 months or every 12 months. For me, that is the role of the, call it messaging strategy, which translates your positioning into a relevant message to your specific target audience. That might evolve, that might change. But the positioning itself should be stable at least for 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so it's not like the brand purpose, you know, why you do what you do. That is more permanent. It will never change.
Well, for me, to be honest, interestingly, the brand purpose is one way to position a brand, right? So it's when I mentioned these 26 sources of brand association, one of them is the brand purpose. It's basically, why did this entrepreneur or this founder start this company? What are his or her values? What good does he or she want to create in the world? But this is for me only one of 26 ways to look at a positioning statement. There are 25 others that if you don't, you know, there are a lot of companies right now, a lot of communication agencies that jump right onto a purpose, right? Purpose is sort of like this very popular, trendy sort of like concept lately. But my approach is to say, well, if that's your choice, unless you're really a founder who started a company with a specific objective in mind to make the world a better place, if that's not the case, and you are just, let's say, a CPG company or a big software company that thinks my solution to all the world problems is a purpose, my reasoning is that if that's your approach, you're leaving out 95% of the other potential options to position your brand by focusing on the purpose. So let's go into the doctor and saying, I don't need a diagnosis. What you need is an aspirin. I don't care what your problem is. Always take an aspirin. That's going to help you. That's the same mentality behind a purpose development, in my opinion. Yeah,
it's sort of ridiculous how everyone has a social purpose, but I mean more like words that people use, like your essence or your, you know, your core brand beliefs. I don't know, the thing that is going to be true about you forever.
Yeah. Your reason for being in the company, maybe that's your mission or your vision. It's like why you are in the business. What is it you're trying to achieve? And stay there for much longer. So positioning would evolve to continue to obtain this vision and mission. And yes, that would be more long-term. So purpose, as I said, it's been hijacked in its meaning and completely misused. So
yes, I agree. So you can have positioning for the brand as a whole and then different positionings for products? How does it work?
Yeah, so there are different philosophies about that, and it depends a bit on what category you're working in. So if you have a brand, you can have a central positioning that is true for all the brand, all the products within that brand. Mm-hmm. And what you may have underneath is different messaging strategies. So what you say about the specific offering is unique, but still building into the associations you have defined as your positioning, so to say. There are other brands where you have, let's say, a portfolio of brand, where you may have strong sub-brands, which each require their own positioning. So it really depends on the brand architecture you have or you decide to have in your organization. And I've learned, like in the field of technology, for example, software and stuff like that, these sub-positionings are often referred to as messaging strategies, which is basically what is it I need to tell my different audiences to appeal to them as my with my overall offering, basically. So it's not a rule set in stone. It depends on your portfolio and your intent, so to say.
Okay. So the starting point to work out your positioning is to understand who your potential customers are.
Yes.
If you don't have a brand already.
So that's typically the case. And sometimes I have clients of mine who come and ask me, you know, to be, they want a new positioning or they want to develop a positioning for their brand, but they are operating in categories that are so convoluted and so complex that the first task is really to capture and frame the actual category they're operating in and then quantify this. Let me give you a quick example. I'm working with an online fundraising platform here in the US. And when you look at the US fundraising market, I mean, it is a jungle out there because you have everything from, you know, big platforms like GoFundMe. You have everything like The polar plunge, which is very popular in Minneapolis, which is you jump in a cold lake and collect raise funds in the process. So the variety of fundraising options and tools at your disposal is absolutely mind-blowing. So there, the first assignment or task was really to define the market, understand the key segment, key opportunities for this client of mine, and then based on that analysis or that research, develop a position based on that.
Okay.
Other brands might be much easier. If you have a brand of cereals that is losing share, where your client wants to be a cereal, so they don't want to look outside the category, mm-hmm. then you jump right into trying to understand, okay, what is the most unique way I can talk about my brand, or the unique, most unique associations I can create for my brands within, let's say, heavy cereal users or women cereal users or children, whatever the segment is you define up front. So yes, targeting is step number one, basically.
Okay, so when HubSpot went into outbound marketing, they created, is that a sort of their own category? Is that something you'd do as part of positioning, or is it just different?
Well, so that, especially in technology, that's interesting, right? Because the competitive space is usually comprised of many frenemies. So which means there are companies you cooperate with, technology firms, but you compete with them in the same time. And the other often characteristic of technology firms or the technology environment is the market changes very quickly. Right. So let's say with a lot of these technology services, you have all of a sudden Amazon that decides with, AWS, Amazon Web Services, to provide a new feature. And that creates massive waves in many different segments. So what I've learned is, especially in the field of technology, what you want to do is focus on customers' need states. And really understand what are the pain points the CTO of a large potential customers really faces every day. That's number one. And number two is, how do you speak about that pain point in a way that is relevant to the executive board? Because that's the other thing with these large companies is, they set strategic priorities. And if your offering doesn't tie into these strategic priorities because you don't understand them, then good luck trying to sell your service. If on the other hand, it's something that the CTO can bring to the board and say, that's a really important service that will help us deliver against our strategic objectives for the next 2 years, and it really solves some of our pain points, then you have a almost winning formula. So that's where you would look at your source of positioning and how, and then you would elevate that to a positioning statement, so to say. Mm-hmm. So it would change a little bit by category, but the principle is the same. You focus on your customer and what is important to them, and their customer, which in that case would be the executive board.
Okay. So what's the starting point to discover the most likely segment?
You really start with understanding your category in the market. And so this can be anything from in the CPG world, do a customer segmentation study or usage and attitude study. In the IT world, it's really trying to identify what are the potential customers that have the pain points that my product could best solve. So how you approach it can be proprietary research, looking at customer segments out there based on existing data, but you really try to find a sweet spot that would where your service or your product could satisfy the biggest need, so to say. And IT is a bit different than the rest of the world, simply because of the nature of it. But there you would really look at what are the pain points potential customers are facing, and how do I solve this pain point, and therefore how do I need to speak about this pain point.
Okay, if you can't afford to do your own segmentation, is there a way of buying into existing studies that have been done? How do you?
You can buy into existing studies, but the problem is a lot of them are really expensive. It depends on what your audience is. So let's say if you want to reach out to IT executives, they are very expensive to recruit. It's possible, but they're very expensive to recruit. If you want to talk to consumers that use mass market brands like big CPG, grocery store brands, etc., etc., then you can really do for very cheap online surveys for a few thousand dollars that give you the basic information you need to get. So there are many different ways to do that. And it's all a question of budget. So I've literally done, you know, hired marketing student to do point of sale research for a premium vodka brand, like an exit research on, you know, why they bought what they bought and what drove them and why they came, etc., to literally global tracking studies in the IT segment that cost a couple of $100,000. So it's, you really can cool. play with both. It really depends on what appetite for information do you have, what's your budget, what's your timeline. So you can be very flexible.
Okay, so assuming you know which segment you want to target, how would you go about working out, having ideas about how to position?
Well, number one would be really understand them, understand what drives them, et cetera, et cetera. And then number two is basically start generating hypotheses on what the solution could be. So part of your discovery, obviously, would be also understanding your competitive environment, your competitive frame of reference, so you know who are the players you are playing against, in a sense. And then what you do is, as I said, you use this methodology to really explore potential hypotheses of what the positioning platform could be. And these hypotheses are, so every process has what I call a divergent phase and then a convergent phase. And the divergent phase is where most processes, I think, fall short, because what you're trying to do is really look at the largest potential number of ideas that are different to solve your problem, right? Mm-hmm. And many companies, unfortunately, only then focus on the consumer and say, okay, what do the consumer want? Or if it's a food brand, well, they want, you know, healthy food that tastes great and increasingly that is sustainable. Well, healthy, sustainable, and great taste is a very generic platform in the food category. Mm-hmm. So then you look at ways on how to talk about these benefits in a different way. And that can be based on the context you place them in. You know, if I take a drink, for example, if I position it as an energy drink, consumers will have very different association than if I associate this with as a thirst quencher or as a fruit juice or as a natural drink. So depending on the category, you can start to explore what does my brand do differently within that segment I've explored, basically. So what association do I need to create to stand out as a fruit juice or as an energy drink? So that's number two. And what you do in this divergent phase, you really come up with as many ideas as you possibly can, and then boil them down by themes, right? So you can see some have always to do with the country of origin, or other territories have to do with what they do to your body, etc., etc. Or a third area could be, you know, endorsers, like third-party experts endorsing your specific offering. And then once you boil down these all, typically in a process like that, we come up with 60 to 70 potential ideas of what the positioning territory could be. And then we boil it down to 8, 10, maybe even 6 or less. And then you go into a validation phase, right? Through research again, either qualitative research or quantitative research, until you narrow down your 6 or 8 themes or territories into one that you think is really going to resonate with your audience. And then once you have validated that, then you can execute against it. So for someone experienced in marketing strategy development, it's a very traditional process. The difference is really the depth of ideas that you are able to come up with is in this divergent phase, because that gives you the truly innovative idea, so to say. Because, you know, if you and I brainstorm for 10 minutes, we'll come up with maybe 12 ideas. And I would say most of them are going to be, you know, expected and generic. Mm-hmm. If 10 of us start to ideate for, you know, 6 hours using this methodology, we will come up with 40, 50 ideas that will be way more diverse and different than the 10 ideas the two of us would come up with. Sure. So it's really the quality of the input determines the output, very simple.
And how does your workbook help in this arena?
Well, what the workbook does, it really maps out very clearly the process on how to come up with these ideas. So it describes the 26 territories in details, not only tells you what the territory is, but gives you like anywhere from 4 to 10 questions to inspire you to look at your brand assignment from that perspective. So it gives you like these tools, but it also raises awareness on, you know, all the biases that we naturally have. And while we all love the notion of, oh, we are hyper-creative, creativity is a value we all cherish and stuff like that, the truth is our brain is not wired to be creative. Our brain is wired to seek the familiar, to seek the comfort, to seek the low risk type of approach. And the truth is an innovative idea takes you out of your comfort zone. There is a risk element if you go to your CEO and say, hey, dear CEO, I have a really cool idea. We've never done that before. I'm not 100% sure it's going to work, but I need $20 million to execute it. You know, no person, sane person would do that. And yet we value this. So the book describes some of the biases we have that you can easily overcome once you become aware of them. So it really, it's not a book about sort of like a new philosophy on branding. What is a brand? So it's not like the next brand purpose ideology. Mm-hmm. It's really a guide on what are the things you can do to come up with as many ideas as possible. And what can you then do to select those ideas to identify the most relevant one for your specific situation, your specific product in your specific market? So it's a workbook. It's a manual. It's a tool. Yes.
So you also need to work out what position other competitors in your category already own, don't you?
Absolutely. So you need to clearly understand the competitors. But the trick is what I've noticed. So these territories can be divided into three sections. One is the frame of reference or the context. Mm-hmm. And all too often, marketers just focus on the immediate competition. So if I sell cereals, I focus on other cereal brands. But there are other ways to look at it. It could be, where is your brand being consumed? Are there rituals you can tie your brand to? Is there a gold standard in the category that you can connect yourself with? There are many different ways to look at your frame of reference outside your immediate competitor. And that's usually where the growth opportunities come from, in my experience, and the really innovative positionings. And then the second bucket has to do with the consumer. How do I connect with my consumer? And typically we talk about, an emotional, functional benefit, maybe a psychological benefit, but that's where a purpose can come in, or shared values. You know, if you identify the values that your consumer segment aspires to and associate yourself with those values, that's a powerful way to connect with your audience. And the third bucket is really the brand or the product or the company itself, where you really scan everything, look at everything from how it's made, where it comes from, what are the ingredients, who endorses them. So that's the third bucket. So as you explore your positioning options, you look at these three buckets: frame of reference, both immediate competitor and broader one, ways to connect with my audience. And there, what you typically want to do is you want to find a way to connect with your audience that your competitors don't use. And what you see typically, if everyone talks about their brand benefit in a highly emotional way, and you stand out and focus on a really rational benefit for why consumers should use your brand, you differentiate yourself immediately from your competitive set. And the third one is simply, what part of your brand, your product allows you to sustain the benefit proposition you make in the competitive environment. So it's what's often described, and you see that in beautiful process, like looks like a linear process, where you're from A plus B equals C and then D. And the reality, it's an ideation process. So it's an organic, chaotic process. that is very rigorous and that at the end comes out with a clear answer, but it's a messy process where you jump from competition analysis to consumer understanding to frame of reference, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So you do that. How do you then control what people actually do perceive your brand to be? If, say, you decide on a word that you want to be associated with you, what do you need to do to ensure that word lands, if you like, that your message lands with people?
Well, then it's really about taking every single element of your marketing mix, and in the broader sense, and that can be through distribution channel, through product, through advertising and promotion, et cetera, through pricing. Everything you do needs to support and reinforce this association, or at the very least, not contradict it. So to give you a simple example is, I remember a few years ago, I read the case study about Pellegrino, this Italian sparkling water. Mm-hmm. And I think one of their launch strategy here in the US was to be distributed exclusively in Italian restaurants. So here's a way on how do you build an association of Italian mineral water. How? By only showing up in Italian eateries, which creates a natural association. But that also, once you have determined what is that core association you want to focus on, then you can look at, is my advertising campaign supporting that association? If I'm an exclusive brand, is my price point supporting that association, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what I like about this definition around bundles of association is also it gives you a very clear benchmark on or criteria to judge everything you do. If a partner, another company comes to you and wants to cooperate and do a joint promotion, mm-hmm. you can use that framework again, just to ask yourself, is that the right partner? Does the partner help us support this association or expand it in a meaningful way? Or does this other partner contradict our association we're trying to build, or is a dissonance happening? So it becomes very simple without being simplistic.
Right. And what do you actually share internally and externally in terms of if you're trying to be associated in people's minds in a certain way? Presumably some of that you share internally with your staff in uh-huh. terms of what they do. So what would you actually share externally about your positioning?
Well, externally, your positioning would translate, most simpler form is like, a website that would express your brand positioning or the associations you try to create. It would be a social media presence. You would build in such a way that it builds your associations. And then you can, depending on your budget, new product development, products only that fit this. So if you're all about safety, you would, all the products you develop within that concept would have somehow to do with safety in a way or another. It can be safety for another audience, but it would be around the notion of safety. Internally, what I've learned is while you develop the positioning, you really need to align the key stakeholders inside the organization. So I like to involve, sales director, R&D director, marketing director, CIO, CTO, because those are the people who ultimately need to embrace the positioning and implement it and execute against this. And then from a more creative point of view, you can socialize a brand positioning through a little video, through all these kind of different things that allow you to make sure that everyone clearly understand what is our brand and clearly understand what role do I play in my department to support that brand in general. So you can do that, internal communication. Videos usually work great because they have a strong emotional component. The beauty of it is once it's clear what you want to stand for and what the two or three or four associations are you want to associate with your brand, then, and there's clarity about that, then finding ideas on how to execute it is very, very straightforward.
Right. So have you got examples of well-known brands positioning? Like Amazon is known for its customer-centric sort of approach, but what's its positioning? How would you describe its positioning?
Well, I think Amazon, so the interesting thing about Amazon is its sheer scale and its sheer customer centricity, right? And I would argue that the competitive advantage of Amazon has to do with its logistics capability, the ability to literally deliver a product to your door between 2 hours and 2 days, which is absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And the fact that it literally has everything available. I think I saw the stat here in the US that 40% of all product searches online start on Amazon. So what I would say is Amazon, what is really distinctive about them is their logistics capabilities, their extreme consumer centricity, frankly, the third element is the lower price. So they naturally create a push on pricing that I've noticed in most cases you find cheaper options on Amazon than anywhere else out there. So that is for me really the three core associations you want to build with Amazon. And you experience them, right? Simply by using their platform, that's how you experience them. Everything you need, you can find delivered extremely quickly because of their logistics and at a price that is often more competitive than anything that is else out there. And then with this consumer centricity, you remove any sort of like fear or barrier with all the consumer reviews and all these kind of things. I wouldn't call the positioning of Amazon, you know, like liberates shoppers around the world to express themselves. No, it's very driven by the experience Amazon provides.
Okay. Is there any other brand you could give as an example of how they manifest their positioning in the way they are?
So one that I absolutely adore is a premium watchmaker called Patek Philippe, Swiss brand. And when you think about the luxury watch market, you have the Rolex. You know, Rolex is all about status symbol. I made it. I have a lot of money. You have other brands like Breitling that is all about, you know, I'm the adventurer aviator lifestyle. So even if I you know, I just have a boring, well-paid office job, if I wear a Breitling, I convey the feeling maybe I have a boat somewhere or I have a really cool adventurous lifestyle. So, but there's a third brand in there that's called Patek Philippe. And what they noticed is that what really matters to their customers is our core values like family and tradition. And they realized that that is really what those people cherish and value and are willing to pay a lot of money for. So the positioning they came up with is all around these two values. And I said earlier, it's like an aspirational value, right? So I aspire to live up to my family and to tradition. And they came up with this beautiful line, which I'm going to get wrong, obviously, but it's this whole notion of you never own a Patek Philippe. You're merely the keeper for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is an absolutely brilliant way to tap into these two values and a way to differentiate yourself from the Rolexes and the Breitlings that are all about bling bling. Extremely expensive watches, but it says, you know what? That is about tradition. That's about my family. It's a watch I'm going to wear for the next 15 years, but then I'm going to hand it over to my children or to the next generation, which is a powerful driver for these people. So that for me would be an example of a really fantastic positioning that we don't maybe hear too often about. But that would be an example, for example.
Great. That's been really useful. So apart from your own book and positioning the battle for the mind, which was written ages ago, are there any other resources, books that you'd recommend for listeners?
So it's going to sound silly, right? So there are a lot of positioning books out there. They're like, I think I Googled it when I wrote the book, and there are like 268 books that pop up when you research brand positioning on Amazon. A lot of them are absolutely useless, in my opinion. What I really prefer are books that are not directly marketing books, but that are books that focus on understanding the human behavior. And there is one written by, I think, Dr. Caldini or Cialdini. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it's called like the Principle of Human Persuasion. I'm not sure that's the title, but it's the content of the book, which
Yeah,
basically
it's
speaks
brilliant.
about how to influence people, or even Dale Carnegie book that is like what 80 years old on how to win friends and influence people. Those are books that focus on humans, how they tick, how they behave, which I find way more interesting than book 269 on how to develop a brand positioning, except for my book, of course, which stand out in the category. But so those are more the things that I'm getting inspired by and learn from, so that's what I would encourage. Or one thing I encourage also younger strategists to always do is just talk to people. Get away from a Google search and talk to people in the grocery store, in at the gas station. Don't make it creepy, but learn from them. Understand what's important to them, why they're here, why they chose to drive this brand of car. That's it. Just talk to people. That's the simplest, most
If
effective
you're
way
interested
to
in
become good at
creating
what you
better
do.
brands, be
Great.
sure
That's
to
been really
subscribe to
useful.
the
Thank you
Brand
so
Tuned
much.
newsletter
No, thank
and
you.
get weekly
Bye.
updates,
Goodbye, have a
including
good day. Thanks for having me.
notifications when new episodes drop.